Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 38. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kevayam Nama Rupabhyam. Yadubhishaha Pandava Bhavato Darshanam Yahi Rishikanam Viveshitu. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas, will end at once. Purport. Kunti Dev is quite aware that the existence of the Pandavas is due to Sri Krishna only. The Pandavas are undoubtedly well established in name and fame and are guided by the great King Yudhisthira, who is morality personified. And the Yadus are undoubtedly great allies. But without the guidance of Lord Krishna, all of them are non-entities. As much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness. No one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Supreme Lord. The living beings are always dependent, and the ultimate dependable object is the Lord Himself. We may therefore invent by our advancement of material knowledge all sorts of counteracting material resources. Without being guided by the Lord, all such inventions end in fiasco, however strong and stout the reactionary elements may be.
Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Jayam Rupa Kadhamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Taru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Sri Advaita Gadadhar
Sivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Kunti has concluded her, not actually, she's going to continue with her prayers, but in the previous verse, she really summed up the essence of her prayers and what she wanted. Their Pandavas and Kunti, they're completely dependent on the mercy of Krishna. And all her prayers, whether she expressed the process of approaching Krishna, those who are, you are the property of the materially impoverished, or she presented Krishna's supreme position and his inconceivable potency, or she presented the reason that Krishna appeared on the planet and the various reason he appeared. But the essence of all her prayers is that the very nature and essence of Krishna and her relationship with Krishna is such that she is completely dependent on Krishna in every way. And therefore, without Krishna, she's so dependent on Krishna, which is actually the constitutional position of the living entity, because we're part and parcel of Krishna and we're meant for his service.
And therefore we're dependent on Krishna, just like Srila Prabhupada says that dharma, or religion, ultimately means that which sustains one's existence. Our very essence and that which sustains our existence is Krishna and is our service to Krishna. Without service to Krishna, we actually have no meaning in life, because we're made for his service. And unless we do that, we will never feel accomplished. That was also the message that Narada Muni gave to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva said, I'm feeling unaccomplished. Well, Narada told him, the reason why you are feeling unaccomplished is because you have not sufficiently glorified Krishna. And therefore, the service which you have done is not complete, and you're feeling unaccomplished because your service was to present the Vedic literature for the liberation of the conditioned souls. You haven't sufficiently presented the essence. Because why? Because Krishna is Prakrite Param. He's the controller of the material nature. He's the Supreme Lord. And he's the protector of his devotees. So all these points were presented by Queen Kunti, and what's being revealed is the nature of bhakti, the nature of devotional service, the mind of a devotee who is dependent on service and love to Krishna. And when that matures and you enter into Krishna's pastimes, you become dependent on your personal association with Krishna also. So we see Kunti's mood, and therefore she's feeling this great separation in meeting Krishna, because Krishna is about to leave. So because Krishna is about to leave, she's feeling the separation from Krishna. And she does not want Krishna to go. Just like the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the gopis, when Akrura came from Mathura and Krishna was about to leave, they were feeling great anguish. Even though Radharani, because she has a loving relationship with Krishna, and therefore that loving relationship is checked by Krishna's elders. You don't feel comfortable in a conjugal relationship when the parents or elders are there. Those loving sentiments are not so easily exchanged, but still when Balaram was on the chariot, she approached Balaram to stop Krishna. She wanted to throw her body in front of the chariot to prevent Krishna from going. Normally, Srimati Radharani was very shy publicly in terms of her expressions of love for Krishna. But when Krishna was about to leave in front of everyone, she expressed her sentiments. There was so much anguish and pain, with the thought of Krishna leaving. What to speak of Krishna actually leaving? So here in this verse here, she's expressing that without Krishna we are dead. We will end. Just like when the soul leaves the body, then everything in relationship to that body has no value. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearing of a living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, then everything in our life has no meaning. Prabhupada said in the purport, Kunti is quite aware that the existence of the Pandavas is due to Sri Krishna only. But without the guidance of Krishna, all of them are non-entities. As much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada also mentions that we should not be proud of any of our material assets, because without the guidance of Krishna, they have no value. No one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Supreme Lord. The living beings are always dependent, and the ultimate dependable object is the Lord himself. Without guidance by the Lord, all such inventions end in fiasco, however strong and stout the reactionary elements are. So now Krishna is going. Bereft of his guidance, they feel there's no value. So this is the mood of separation. The mood of separation means that when your object of love, when you're separated from your object of love, you feel as if you have no life. This mood of separation is experienced for Krishna, and this mood of separation is experienced for his devotees. Just like when Vidura came back to Hastinapur after 30 years on pilgrimage, Maharaj Yudhisthira told him that we feel as if the consciousness has come back into the body. So this is why Kunti is crying so pitifully for the Lord to stay, because she feels, and the Pandavas feels, without the Supreme Lord, the life has no value. Nayam so vishyate tatra yate dhanim gadadaha tvatpada ankita bhati svalakshanam vilakshitai. O Gadadhar Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful, but when you leave, it will no longer be so. So without Krishna, there's no life. Without Krishna, there's no beauty. So when Krishna was here, the earth became marked in Vrindavan. There's such beautiful white sands by the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Krishna would walk in the white sands and his footprint would be imprinted within the sand. And it was so beautiful to see Krishna's footprints that it would be an impetus for ecstatic love called Udipan. Udipan means like lighting something. When a qualified devotee would see Krishna's footprints, his bhakti would be inflamed. These marks of Krishna's feet, there are certain particular marks on the feet of the Lord which distinguish the Lord from others. The marks of a flag, thunderbolt, an instrument to drive an elephant, umbrella, lotus, disc, etc. are all on the bottom of the Lord's feet. These marks are impressed upon the soft dust of the land where the Lord traverses. The land of Hastinapur is thus marked with Lord Sri Krishna's feet when he was there with the Pandavas. And because of that, because Krishna's feet were on the land of it, everything flourished. And so therefore, as Prabhupada says, she was afraid of ill luck when Krishna would leave. Ime jana pada sridha sapak voshadi viruda vanad vinad yudan vanto ye dhanti tava vikshitai. All these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance. The trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, and the hills are full of minerals and the oceans full of wealth. And this is all due to your glancing over them. So without Krishna, there's no life. Without Krishna, there's no beauty. And without Krishna, there's no opulence. And Prabhupada discusses how human prosperity is dependent
on nature's gifts. And nature's gifts manifest by the will of the Lord. It's like there can be drought and there's no proper agriculture. And the rains, but who can control the rains? It's all under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So by satisfying Him, there's natural prosperity. This is the principle of sacrifice. Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anasambhava. All living beings subsist on food grains, and food grains come from sacrifice. And sacrifice comes from doing your prescribed duties, which are with sacrifices prescribed in the Vedas. The Vedas are emanating from the breath of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the all-pervading transcendence is there in acts of sacrifice. So without Krishna, that we have really no wealth. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although only a few can live lavishly by exploitation. The natural gifts such as grains, vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls are supplied by the order of the Supreme as He desires. Material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. So it's all by Krishna's mercy. And if we exploit or try to control nature, beyond the prescriptions of Krishna for a proper society and for the flourishment and for the enhancement of devotional service, then there'll be reactions. By all these natural gifts are depend on the mercy of the Lord. What we need therefore is to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by devotional service. The indications by Kunti Deva are just to the point. She desires that God's mercy be bestowed upon them so that natural prosperity be maintained by His grace. Ata vivesha vishvatmam vishvamurte svakeshume sneha pashamimam chindi dirham pandushu vishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality, the form of the universe, please therefore sever my ties of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. So Kunti Dev's explaining that how useless, unattractive, and destitute everything is without the presence of Krishna. This is this is love of Godhead, and we'll see this love of Godhead developing. Love of Godhead means that one reposes his complete affection on Krishna and nothing else. It does not mean that we don't love living entities. We also love the living entities, but in relationship to service to Krishna. So this is her emotions being expressed. I mean, she's seeing that Krishna is leaving Hastinapur. Her mood of separation is swelling within her heart, that if Krishna goes, if I'm bereft of Krishna's glance, if I'm bereft of Krishna's favor, then my life will end. So she's expressing so strongly her mood of affection for Krishna. And she's such in a spiritual, emotional state. In other words, her
affection for Krishna is completely absorbing her consciousness. In that mood, then she's thinking how she's asking Krishna to stay in Hastinapur. And then she's thinking that she's feeling ashamed because it seems she's asking the Lord for something based on her personal selfishness, which means her family. There's selfishness and there's extended selfishness. The concept that we're the body is a mental conception. And that mental conception can be extended to the family. So that one is receiving great pleasure, personal pleasure, sense gratification. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. When their family is aggrandized and when their family is successful, you can extend the concept of the self to the nation. When my nation is successful. It's not selflessness. Nationalism is not selflessness. Family affection is not selflessness. So in this mood of complete absorption and focus in service to Krishna and having Krishna within her presence so that her life can become more auspicious and she can serve Krishna, a pure devotee becomes very sensitive to any faults that within the heart. Just like if you have a glass of clean water, then any speck of dirt becomes obvious. So a devotee's heart is very, very clean and pure. And therefore, any tinge of self-interest becomes so apparent. In contrast to someone who is very selfish and arrogant, then no impurity can be recognized. Even the grossest fault cannot be recognized. Just like when you have a glass of water that's filled with so much dirt, then other things can enter and you'd never notice. So the characteristic of a devotee is they're so sensitive to any apparent fault in their heart, any apparent selfish motive. They become very, very disturbed. It becomes very, very apparent to them. This is the nature of a devotee. The nature of the devotee is he's very liberal with others and very strict with himself. That's the nature of a devotee. So nice seeing the mind of the pure devotee, the mind of Queen Kunti. Reminds me of Raghunath Das Goswami. He was just taking a few drops of buttermilk a day, but feeling that I am practically a debauchee. I'm so self-interested. Or Madhavendra Puri, when he was in South India on a mission, is actually in Orissa, on a mission to get sandalwood for his deity in Vrindavan, who he felt, because the deity was buried by the Muslims for so many years, he felt that the deity actually communicated to him that he was so hot from this ordeal. So he went to get sandalwood pulp. And then when he went to see a deity called Gopinath in Raymuna, the deity stole some sweet rice. Well, what happened is Madhavendra Puri looked at the sweet rice, a kheer, it's actually cooked down milk, not sweet rice, cooked down milk, and thought, this looks so wonderful. Maybe I should get some for my deity, Gopal. That was a pure desire for the satisfaction of his deities, but because he was expressing the desire to taste that kheer, he was feeling that I am just a sense gratifier. And immediately he left that place. So the same thing, Kunti. Pandavas are great devotees. There's nothing wrong with affection for the Pandavas. But because she has bodily relations with them, and because in the situation she's asking Krishna to stay to benedict her sons, then she begins to think of her paternal home. We know that Kunti's is the sister of Vasudev. So the dynasty of Vasudev, the Vrishni dynasty, is now in Hastinapur because Krishna moved there from Mathura. So
So now they're going back. I mean, it's in Dwarka. They moved to Dwarka from Mathura. So they're all in Dwarka. Now she's thinking, I'm preventing them from going to Dwarka. What about the... So she starts thinking that there's partialities in her mind due to attachment. And she's so focused on being Krishna's unalloyed servant that she's even asked, sever my affection. Sever my attachment. A devotee doesn't want anything to compromise his service to Krishna. Our eternal relationship is with Krishna. Other relationships are temporary. The devotee does not want to compromise his service to Krishna based on any bodily attachment. So this is the mood of a devotee. Prabhupada explains that a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. He's broad-minded. That's what Prabhupada said. Unless you can become detached from family affection or acting on the platform of family affection and act for the betterment of all living entities, then you can't actually become a Brahmin. The typical example is the band of the six Goswamis who follow the path of Lord Chaitanya. Tyaktva, Turnam, Ashesha, Mandala, Pati, Shrenim, Siddha, Tuchavat, Bhutva, Dina, Ganesha, Kal, Karunaya, Kopina, Kantasita. Tyaktva, Turnam, Ashesha, Mandala, Pati, Shrenim. They kicked off all aristocracy as insignificant. Bhutva, Dina, Ganesha, Kal, Karunaya. Why? Out of compassion for all the fallen souls. Bhutva, Chaktva Turnamasesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sadatu Chavat Bhutva Dina Ganesha Kal Karunaya Kopina Kantasrita. They had just loincloth, Kunti Mala, very simple. They gave up everything. So, this is the higher consciousness. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from bondage of family affection. So here Prabhupada says the Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, as the Lord of the universal mind. Krishna is addressed here as Vishvesha, Vishvatman, Vishma. You are powerful. And therefore, you have the ability to do this. We discussed that before, the ability to cut off this attachment for the material body. Family affection means attachment for the material body. Attachment to sense gratification. Attachment to the conception that I am the enjoyer and the controller. There's nothing wrong with family life, if it's God-centered. This will be discussed in the next purport. So Krishna she's addressing Krishna as the power behind the universe. So you can do this, just like we discussed. You can cut this family attachment, just as we discussed before in a previous verse, where Prabhupada discusses how even stalwarts on the line of devotional service have felt prey to the allurement of wealth and women. And then the question was asked that these things are so difficult to overcome. How can they be overcome? Not by our own power, but they can overcome by the power of Krishna, who reciprocates with his devotee, who has a sincere desire to serve him, and therefore is engaged in chanting and hearing his glories. So this is the mood of a devotee. Vishvatman, Vishvesha, Vishvamurti. You are the Supreme Lord. Therefore, you can do this. And you can do this. You can cut the hard knot of family affection. It's so difficult to overcome
these material desires. They're so binding to the bodily and the material and bodily conception of life. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity toward a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to be completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead, just like with Narada Muni. Narada Muni had this desire to fully engage in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna made the arrangement for him to free him from the dependence on family. Same thing with Srila Prabhupada. When you're engaged in household life, you see that you become compromised because you have so many personal considerations. So this is, you know, Kunti's prayer. Twayi me nanya vishaya matir madhupate krisakrit vatim udva hataradha gange vogham udanvati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So this is the reason why she prayed to have her family sever her tie of affection for her kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. This is why, because she wanted to have prema. She wanted to have prema means to, as Prabhupada explained, as it's explained in Nectar of Devotion, when Rupa Goswami describes what is prema. He gives the example of Bhishma Dev, who at the very end of his life, when he got, Bhishma Dev knew when he, it's going to be described in the next chapter, Bhishma Dev knew when he would, Bhishma Dev had the benediction that he can die at will. So he was waiting for the sun to move in an auspicious place, and then at that particular time, immediately, he cut off all attraction to the world. And he said, you know, let my mind, which has been, you know, so engaged in so many things, just focus exclusively on Krishna. And you actually see it. He's talking to all the great sages, but that when the time comes where he's about to leave his body, he just focuses his mind completely and prays to take that consciousness, which has been attracted to so many things in this world, and just focus it exclusively on Krishna. And that's one of the examples that's given of prema. And I quote this verse very often, Sandrandana Visheshatma. One of the six qualities of pure devotional service is prema bhakti. And what does prema bhakti mean? Sandrandana, it's dense. The consciousness is dense. It is only Krishna and nothing else. And if you can think of it, That's the path of advancement in Krishna consciousness that we're taking. As we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, our thoughts on Krishna should become more and more concentrated. And our thoughts of our personal sense gratification and aggrandizement and material advancement should become less and less. That's the process of advancing in Krishna consciousness. And that's why it's described in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second verse that by submissively hearing the Bhagavatam, Krishna becomes compact within one's heart. What does it mean that Krishna becomes compact within one's heart? It means our focus, our consciousness on Him becomes more and more focused and absorbed. Until there's nothing else but Krishna. Just like the example is given, or the description is given by Rupa Goswami, is the difference between bhava and prema. It's the difference between the sun rays and the sun. The sun rays has heat and light, but there's laxity. That's bhava. The sun has heat and light, but it's condensed. There's no laxity. There's nothing else but heat and light. So that's the consciousness of one who is in prema bhakti.
He's fully absorbed in Krishna without anything else. And therefore, Kunti Dev, when she sees that she has some considerations in her consciousness based on the bodily concept of life, which means based on sense gratification, she has such a strong desire for Krishna consciousness that immediately she condemns that and wants Krishna, who's all powerful, to root out even these subtle desires for sense gratification within the heart. Therefore, in the purport, Prabhupada says, perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And then there's nice points in the purport that this does not mean to cut out all affection. You just have to change the object of your affection. Prabhupada said, only the symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. And Prabhupada explains it. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection for family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. So you may ask, why is she saying sever the affection? Why is she saying sever the affection to my family? What is wrong with family affection? Well, here it is. It's actually a different phase of sense gratification. Family affection is not selfless. Why are you serving your family and not someone else? Because there's something in it for you in terms of your material consciousness that I become great. There's something in it for you. We worship our family, we support our family, but it is a selfish desire there. It's an extension of the self, and therefore when the family does well, then I get a sense of greatness and control. It's part of the material consciousness. And that's why she wants it cut off. Because when family affection is based on the body, it's part of your own sense gratification to please the senses of your family. It's not love. And she realizes this. So the desire doesn't have to be changed. It just has to be changed for the satisfaction of the Lord. Prabhupada discusses that about Arjuna. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there, Krishna was there, but Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activity. Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that protection and prayed for it. Now, one point that Prabhupada clears up, and I do want to read, is that you can think by these prayers that Kunti wanted to become basically impersonal, have no heart and no affection for any people. Sometimes devotees who become renounced, they seem to become dry and impersonal. So Prabhupada deals with the point, and I think it's worth reading. Her affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis is not out of the range of devotional service because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. Sometimes service to the devotee is more valuable than service to the Lord. But here the affection of Kunti Dev for the Pandavas and Vrishnis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or the mind are due to the influence of the external energy. relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. So we should have affection for family. When the family are devotees, or we can see them as devotees. Affection for our family means to serve them so that they can become enlightened in Krishna consciousness. And then that type of relationship can be on the basis of the soul. When Kunti Dev wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage. But the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. So, discussing here. Any question? Text 43. Sri Krishna, Krishna Shaka, Vishni, Rishabhavani Dhuk, Rajanya Vamsa, Tahanana Pavarga Virya, Govinda Godvija Sarati Haravatara, Yogeshvarakila Guru Bhagavan Namaste. So Prabhupada describes in the purport, this is a summary of Kunti's prayers. We can hear it as a summary. O Krishna, O friend of Arjuna, O chief among the descendants of Vrishni, you are the destroyer of those political parties which are disturbing elements on this earth. Your prowess never deteriorates. You are the proprietor of the transcendental abode, and you descend to relieve the distresses of the cows and the brahmanas and the devotees. You possess all mystic power. You are the preceptor of the universe. You are the almighty God. I offer you my respectful obeisances.
Suta uvacha pratayetam kalapadai parinuta kilodaya mandajaha savaikunto mohayan nivamaya.
Suta Goswami said, the Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Dev, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. So now Suta Goswami is explaining Krishna's reaction to those prayers, and Krishna smiles, and that smile is described as Mohayan. It's captivating, it's enchanting. Anything Prabhupada says that is enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord. This is interesting. The conditioned souls who are engaged in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by his mystic powers. So conditioned souls become attracted by Krishna's mystic powers, how he controls the world, has inconceivable potency, and he pervades the whole universe. And, you know, I am the mountains, I am the Himalayas, I am the, you know, all the vibhutis, all the powers mystify the conditioned souls. His devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord and his merciful blessings upon them. So the devotees are enchanted in a different way. They're enchanted by Krishna's personality and his charm and his blessings upon them. And it's interesting that, you know, the Lord is so enchanting and his reciprocation is so pleasing and wonderful. But what has actually pleased him is Kunti's prayers. But as Prabhupada said, no prayers about Krishna can actually be satisfactory. You cannot really glorify Krishna. You cannot really sufficiently glorify Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is known, Prabhupada said here in the purport, is uttama shloka. No amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the glories. So what satisfies him? He is satisfied by such prayers as a father is satisfied by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. In other words, to glorify Krishna, even Kunti's prayers are so beautiful, it's not a very good attempt, because Krishna is way beyond anything we can describe. But what he's appreciating is the attempt of Kunti and the devotion of Kunti. A very nice analogy. We can just, in our minds, just imagine getting Krishna's pleasure in terms of his glance and smile of satisfaction for some sincere service we did. Tambadam ityupa mantra pravishya gajasavayam shriyascha svapuram yasyam prema raja nivarita. Thus accepting the prayers of Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord subsequently informed other ladies of his departure by entering the palace of Hastinapur. But upon preparing to leave, he was stopped by Yudhisthira, who implored him lovingly. So each time the Lord tries to leave, his devotees try to stop him. First Uttara, Pahi Pahi Mahayogam, Yoga, oh Krishna, please protect me. Then Kunti, now Yudhisthira. So Krishna is the quality of this love that they have, this prema. One of the characteristics of prema is Sri Krishna Karshani. That by that prema, by that devotion, Krishna becomes controlled. As we mentioned, Krishna is the property of the material impoverished. You can do what you want with your property. When one is actually dependent on Krishna and loves Krishna, they own Krishna. They control Krishna by their devotion. Purport, no one could make Lord Krishna stay at Hastinapur when he decided to start for Dwarka. But the simple request of King Yudhisthira that the Lord remain there for a few days more was immediately effective. This signifies that the power of King Yudhisthira was loving affection, which the Lord could not deny. The Almighty God is thus conquered only by loving service and nothing else. He is fully independent in all his dealings, but he voluntarily accepts obligations by the loving affection of his pure devotees.
Vyasadhyay Ishvare Hagyay Krishne na Bhutta Karmana Prabodhito Vitahasaya Nabudyatta Sucharpita.
King Yudhisthira, who is very much aggrieved, could not be convinced, despite instructions by great sages headed by Vyas and the Lord Krishna himself, the performer of superhuman feats, and despite all historical evidence. So Yudhisthira, I think it's mentioned, was mortified by the mass killing. This is to enthrone him. Prabhupada mentions that 640 million people were killed. It was the greatest battle in the world within 5,000 years. And the objective of the war was to enthrone Yudhisthira. So when Yudhisthira, after the war, was enthroned, he was feeling that that was the cause. His being enthroned as the king was the cause of the war, and therefore he was the cause. And he was mortified. There was rivers of blood and dead bodies. And he was feeling personally that this was his fault. This mass killing simply to enthrone Maharaj Yudhisthira was too mortifying. So he tried to be convinced with evidence by history, by great sages like Vyasa and Lord Krishna, that the fight was just because the cause was just. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was not satisfied. even though he was instructed by the greatest personalities of this time. Krishna is designated herein as the performer of superhuman activities, but in this particular instant, neither he nor Vyas could convince King Yudhisthira. So they could not. When you're distressed, every can understand that the cause of distress is ignorance. So by getting some knowledge or enlightenment, one becomes pacified. So you would expect that Veda Vyas, who's the Shaktivesh avatar for editing the Vedas, and Maharaj Yudhisthira, who's Dhammaraj, a personification of religion, could pacify him. Just as previously, Krishna had pacified all the Kuru dynasty after, at the beginning of this chapter, the Kuru dynasty, they performed oblations at the Ganga, and then Krishna satisfied him by citing and describing the stringent laws of material nature. Well, Krishna satisfied everyone, but not Yudhisthira. And neither could Vyas. So this is probably how Prabhupada explains. Does this mean that he failed to be a human actor? No, certainly not. The interpretation is that the Lord as Ishvara, or the super soul, in the hearts of both King Yudhisthira and Vyas, performed still more superhuman action because the Lord desired it. As super soul of King Yudhisthira, he did not allow the king to be convinced by the words of Vyas and others, because he desired that the king hear instructions from the dying Bhishmadev, who is another great devotee of the Lord. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see how Krishna has a relationship with his devotees and how he reciprocates the love of his devotees. So when we see how Krishna was so dedicated to Bhishmadev and so much wanted to glorify him that he inspired Yudhisthira in the heart not to be satisfied with the instructions of Krishna and Yudhisthira, so that Yudhisthira would be forced to seek out Grandfather Bhishma, who would enlighten Yudhisthira in front of all the great sages of the world and thus be glorified as a devotee. In other words, he was a devotee who would be glorified, and Krishna wants to glorify his devotee. Krishna is reciprocating the service and love of his devotees, and therefore we want to have that relationship with such a person as Krishna, who perfectly can reciprocate our service and devotion. So this is the wonderful personality of Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is not only revealing the mind of his devotees, he's revealing the mind of Krishna. This is the mind of Krishna. He is thinking how to render service and satisfy and glorify his devotees. The Lord wanted that at the last stage of his material existence, the great warrior Bhishmadev see him personally and see his beloved children. So he also wanted to make an arrangement that Bhishmadev would fulfill his desire to seek Krishna at the end of his life. So that was another desire. And then Prabhupada at the end talked about how Bhishmadev, even though he loved the Pandavas so much, he fought at the other side. This is just a technical point. But the answer is the Kshatriyas are also very stern people, and therefore he was obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because he was maintained at the expense of Duryodhana. So he followed principles. As he was maintained by him, he had to fight on his side.
Aharaja dharma sutas chintayam suryadam vadam prakrite natmana vipra sneha moham visham gata.
King Yudhisthira, son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was aggrieved just like a common materialistic man. O sages, thus deluded by affection, he began to speak. So, this is not proper for a man of Yudhisthira caliber to be overwhelmed by grief. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna, Asochanan vasochas tvam pragyavadam stribhashase gatasun agatasun cha Nanu Sochati Pandita, that although speaking learned words, you're a fool. The wise man laments neither for the living nor the dead. He laments that people are attached to the body in ignorance and suffer, but he doesn't lament that the body changes, which is death, because that's inevitable. He laments that people suffer death due to attachment, so he laments for their ignorance, not for the transformation of matter, which is inevitable, and for their purification. So, this is unbecoming. He was grieving like a common materialistic man. Krishna also tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, kutas tva kajmilam idam, vishame samupastitam, anarya jista asvargyam, akirtam karam Arjuna. Kutas tva kajmilam idam, where does this dirt come upon you that you're lamenting like this? Vishame samupastitam, at this hour of importance in the battle, where have this dirt come? Kutas tva. Anarya jastam asvargyam, akirti karam Arjuna. It doesn't lead to good, Kutas tva kashmilam idam, vishame samupastitam, anarya. It's not anarya. Arya means cultured first class man. Cultured first-class men do not do this. Why? Anaya jasta asvargyam. In the future birth, you won't get a high designation. Akirti karamarja. In this life, you'll be infamous. You'll ruin this life and you'll ruin the next. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that Yudhisthira actually knew this, but by the will of the Lord, he becomes bewildered because there's a great idea behind this delusion. The king would be instructed by Bhishma as Arjuna was instructed by the Lord himself. So it's Krishna's covering potency.
Aho me pasyata gyanam riddhi rudham duratmana parakyasyaiva dehasya bhavyo me shohinirhata.
King Yudhisthira said, oh my lot, I am the most sinful man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance. This body, which is ultimately meant for others, has killed many, many phalanxes of men. So this is the mood of a Vaishnava. The mood of a Vaishnava is that he sees his own fault. I described that before. He's strict with himself and liberal with others. Just like Maharaj Yudhisthira later, when by the will of Krishna, he became angry because a sage wouldn't greet him in his ashram. This sage was actually meditating. Then in anger, he threw a dead snake on the body of the sage. Then he was cursed to die by the sage's son, Sringi, which was a extreme reaction for the minor fault that he did. But Maharaj Yudhisthira did not look at what is justice. He looked at his own fault. So the Vaishnava is always seeing his own fault. And in that way, he becomes rectified of whatever mistakes he made and the consciousness that had caused him to commit it. So this is a Vaishnava mood. He's condemning himself and thinking that the body, he knows this, the body is meant for others. The body is meant for service, not for selfishness. And he's sorry that he used his body in this way.
Baladvija surin mitra pitri bratri guru druha name syan rayan moksho yapi varsha yuta yute.
I've killed many boys, Brahmins, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will be not relieved from the hell that awaits me for all these sins. So war is hell, and Yudhisthira is thinking that one who participates in this mass killing will also go to hell.
Naino ragya praja bartur dharma yudhe vado drisham. Etime na tubodaya kalpate shasanam bhaja.
There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizen. but this injunction is not applicable to me. So Maharaj Yudhisthira thought the killing was for his own ambition, because he was not involved in the kingdom. Duryodhana was ruling the kingdom, and he was doing a good job. So he's thinking, what's the fight for? It's okay, there's no sin if you fight out of duty as a kshatriya to protect the citizens, but I was fighting against the government, and the government was doing a good job.
Srinam adatta bandhunam droho yo savi hotita karma bir griha mediyar nayam kopo vyapohitum.
I have killed many friends of women, and I have thus caused enmity to such an extent that it is not possible to undo it by material welfare work. So he said, Striyam Madhata Bandhanam. Killed the friends of women and caused such an extent of enmity. What does that mean? In a war, the sons, the fathers, and the husbands of women are killed. And because of that, even the war ends, it creates such an enmity in them that the hostility continues on and on and on, just like in Ireland and Northern Ireland between the Catholics and Protestants, Israel between the Jews and the Arabs, India between the Indians and the Pakistanis. When the war comes, it just doesn't end with the war, but it creates an enmity that continues to go on, war after war. So he thought there's no possibility to counteract this because it's so horrible. Maharaj Yudhisthira performed this Ashwamedha yajna, but he thinks that even by performing such yajnas, it is not possible to get relief from the great sins committed. In war, either the husband or the brother, or even the fathers or sons go to fight. When they are killed, a fresh enmity is created, and thus a chain of actions and reactions increases, which is not possible to be counteracted even by thousands of Ashwamedha yajnas. It goes on and on and on and on. What to speak of 640 million men killed, and their wives being widowed, and sons being killed, and fathers being killed, and the enmity continues. The Prabhupada in the purport makes an interesting point, but he's not actually responsible for sin. Why? Because it was the will of the Lord that he fights. One gets karma when he does something out of, one who desires the work becomes the cause. So if you act on behalf of Krishna's desire, then Krishna becomes the cause, and therefore you don't have karma. That's the basic way that one becomes free from karma. He acts dutifully, not out of personal desire, but out of the desire of God. And therefore, God is the cause of the work and not you. So it's God that's the cause of the war, not Yudhisthira. He was just following Krishna's desire as his devotee. So there's actually no sin.
Yata pankena pankaba surayava surakritam putahatyam tataivaikam nayagyar mashritam harati.
As it is not possible to filter muddy water through mud or purify a wine-stained pot with wine, it is not possible to counteract the killing of men by sacrificing animals. So, I mentioned, Yudhisthira feels he's sinful, but he is not. The whole purpose, therefore, is served when everything is done for the will of the Lord. This is possible only for the devotees. Okay, thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit Saved. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.